149? John Wells felt his biceps burn as he reached full extension. He held, lowered himself again. Beneath him, the world narrowed to a few square feet. The cigarette burns speckling the dirty green carpet were as large as canyons. 150. Up Wells went, slow and sure. Outside, a spring breeze rolled off the Caribbean. In here, the air was humid, almost murky. Sweat puddled at the base of his neck, dripped off his bare chest. The room's door swung open. Afternoon sunlight flooded in. Wells raised his left hand to shield his eyes and decided to see if he could get away with a one-armed push-up. Down he went, balanced on his right arm. He hadn't tried one in years. Harder than he remembered. Or he was getting old. He tensed his chest, felt his triceps and biceps quiver, held himself steady. Brett Gaffin stepped into the room, flipped on the light. "Trying to impress me, John?" Wells ignored Gaffin, pushed, rose, stopped, found himself stuck. Sweat stung his eyes. He slipped sideways and, with a final convulsive effort, forced himself up. Once he passed halfway, he felt the power coming from his biceps rather than his triceps and knew he'd be all right. He stood as soon as he finished, before his arm could give out. "You look like you're going to have a stroke." "I could do those all day." Wells tried to stop panting. "Uh-huh." Gaffin tossed Wells a paper bag. Inside, a liter of cold water. "Thank you." Wells sucked down half the bottle. As part of his cover, he had to drink. And though he was careful to nurse his red stripes, he couldn't be too careful. He'd gone through 5 or 6 last night. He wasn't used to drinking so much, or drinking at all. Every morning he woke to a cotton-filled mouth and a shrunken skull. Until a few months before, Wells had been a CIA operative. He'd had a long and successful career at the agency. A few years before, he'd played a highly public role in stopping a terrorist attack on Times Square. But his missions since then had been kept quiet and the public's attention was fickle. He was still a legend among cops and soldiers, but civilians rarely recognized him. Wells would admit that part of him had loved working for the agency. The CIA and its cousins in the intelligence community could arrange a new identity in a matter of hours, get him anywhere in the world in a day, hear any call, open any email, track any vehicle. But the power came with a price, one Wells could no longer pay. He had always been allergic to the Langley bureaucracy, the way the CIA's executives put frontline operatives at risk for their own gain. After his last mission, the tension had grown unbearable. Vinnie Duto, the agency's director, had used Wells to win an intra-agency power struggle. Wells felt what was left of his honor boiling away in the cauldron of Duto's contempt. He saw no choice but to quit, make a life for himself in New Hampshire, a land whose silent woods mocked Washington's empty talk. The Granite Mountains would outlast empires and the men who built them. He rented a cabin in a little town called Berlin. But he and his dog, Tonka, spent a lot of time 50 miles south in North Conway with Ann Marshall. Wells had met Ann a few months before his last mission. She knew who he was and some of what he'd done, though he kept some details from her. He wasn't sure yet what their future would be. Now, Wells was back in the field. He had decided to run down a fugitive CIA double agent. Without official approval, not for the first time on this trip, Wells wondered what he was trying to prove. And to whom? He dropped the empty water bottle on the floor, where it joined crushed Bud Light cans and the remains of a joint that had rolled under the dresser between the two queen beds. All left here on the unlikely chance that a Jamaican drug dealer decided he needed to check their cover. Gaffin and Wells were sharing the room, which had acquired a funky odor after 4 days. "Yo, you have to play that way?"
"Did you really just say yo?"
"I did." Gaffin had grown up in northern New Jersey, a row house town called Bergenfield near New York City. His years in North Carolina and Georgia had coated his Jersey accent with a strange sugar. He seemed to speak fast and slow at the same time. Wells couldn't explain how.
"Please don't, ever again."
Wells pulled a dirty T-shirt on with his cargo shorts, slipped black work boots on his sockless feet. He'd owned the boots barely 2 weeks, but they were as ripe as the room. He tugged a New York Mets cap low on his head and stuffed 20 $20 bills in his pocket. Wells was a Red Sox fan, but he couldn't wear the cursive B under these circumstances. How do I look? The question is not how you look, it's how you smell.
How do I smell?
Like a skeezy pothead dumb enough to think you can buy a few ounces of good shit without getting rolled, Mom.
Exactly right, let's go.
Gaffin was a former special ops soldier who had crossed paths with Wells twice before. They'd stayed in loose touch after the second mission. When Wells realized he would need backup for this trip, he'd called Gaffin, who had quit the Army, to join a private security firm in North Carolina. Gaffin had happily taken a week of vacation to join him. At the door, Gaffin stopped. "Pea shooters tonight?" Wells's old Makarov and Gaffin's new Glock were stowed in plastic bags in the air conditioning vent in the bathroom, along with two suits, one for Wells and one for Gaffin. For the moment, Wells had insisted they leave the weapons. They were supposed to be small-time dope dealers. Guns would raise questions, and being unarmed didn't bother him. He'd gone naked on lots of missions. Gaffin obviously didn't enjoy the feeling. He'd asked Wells to reconsider a couple of times.
"Son, don't take your guns to town."
Gaffin tapped his temple. "Johnny Cash, like it, yo.
Keep this up in this trouble ahead.
The dead, showing your age."